Alright everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show. We are back doing another supplemental show, covering some more AI articles and some other things. It's not just all AI this time, and I promise this time it's not all just AI, but we do have some articles about that. Okay, so we have an AI Catholic priest demoted after saying it's okay to baptize babies with Gatorade. Oh, yes, Gatorade. You can baptize the babies with Gatorade. The athletes love it, and the Lord loves it. That's just what I'm saying. With all the things going on in the world right now, it's pretty clear that we're living in one of the weirdest timelines imaginable, an assessment reaffirmed once again by a Christian media ministry group, Catholic Answers, which recently launched an AI Catholic priest, only to defrock it a few days later. With all the hype surrounding the topic of AI these days, the group in question decided it would be a wonderful idea to combine faith with modern technologies, launching Father Justin last week. Featuring a 3D model resembling a real-life Catholic priest and LLMs backing it up, Father Justin was designed to offer faithful and educational insights into Catholicism, with Chris Costello, director of IT at Catholic Answers, believing that the AI could assist one in better understanding and articulating Catholic teachings. Yet, as the saying goes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and this was certainly the case for Father Justin, who instead of sticking to Catholic-aligned responses went full-on Martin Luther and seemingly kicked off its own branch of Christianity. Setting aside the very notion of creating an AI priest with hundreds of Christians understandably found very troubling, the answers Father Justin provided were just as controversial, with the mechanical cleric blessing a marriage between a brother and a sister. Oh, it's okay in the AVNs. In the adult visual novels, the Lord will allow it. Telling one user that it's perfectly fine to baptize a baby in Gatorade, and saying that he is as real as the faith we share, meaning it was most likely just another instance of generative AI hallucinating, aka making stuff up. Considering how multifaceted the topic of religion is, it's no wonder that many were offended by this experiment. Following the immense backlash they faced on social media, Catholic Answers quickly demoted Father Justin to just Justin, giving the model a new set of clothes and the title of virtual apologist without actually removing the chatbot from the internet. Moreover, the team plans to continue refining the AI and improving the app going forward, leveraging the user's negative responses and experiences with Father Justin as feedback for future improvements. We won't say he's been laced because he was never a real priest. He'll be available to visitors to Catholic.com, thousands of whom have already used the app with great profit, commented Catholic Answers President Christopher Check. Furthermore, with the help of user input, we will continue to refine and improve the app by identifying any deficiencies. We didn't anticipate that someone might seek sacramental absolution from a computer graphic, which we quickly correct. Wow. So what do you make of all this? Do you see Father Justin as a sign of things to come, where AI becomes increasingly entwined with various aspects of our lives? Share your thoughts in the comments. It reminds me of that first movie that George Lucas did, that dystopian movie, where they would have this this religion. Basically, they would go, I think it's Lucas that did it, but it was a virtual priest or something that they would repent their sins to, or something like that. It's one of these dystopian movies where they did that, and it seems like we're headed on that level. There's no comments. Midjourney accuses Stability AI of theft. Wow, message history of 600 million Discord users can be accessed for $5. I wonder if that's anything worth. Yeah. We'll talk about this. message history of 600 million Discord users, including mine, probably can be accessed for $5. New report sheds light on a scraping service that lets anyone view your message history across different Discord servers. As if the earlier kerfuffle surrounding an addition of sponsored ads wasn't enough, Discord has now found itself embroiled in new controversy revolving around a scraping service that collects the messaging platform's users' data and tracks their messages shared across various servers. As exposed in a recent write-up by the 404 media team, the service known as SpyPet is actively scraping Discord servers on a large scale, archiving and monitoring users' messages and activities across various servers, including the voice channel interactions. This data is then sold for as little as $5 in crypto, with the report mentioning that the purposes for which this data is sold include training AI models and assisting law enforcement agencies. Interesting. The publication further reveals that SpyPet currently holds a database of more than 3 billion messages gathered by over 14,000 servers, tracking over 14,000 servers, with 600 million users, with Discord allegedly boasting around 614 million registered users as of January 2024. This implies that the website in question is constantly monitoring the overwhelming majority of them. As part of 404 Media's investigation, they uncovered that after submitting a payment, SpyPet customers receive credits at a rate of $1 per 100 credits, which can be used to look up individual users to servers they're part of, connected accounts, recent messages, and their activity in specific voice channels within a server. Moreover, the team discovered that the service doesn't appear to have access to the user's private messages and solely scrapes content from channels within Discord servers. Additionally, they contacted SpyPet's creator, who described Discord as basically the holy grail of scraping, since Discord is trying to absolutely anything to combat scraping. So if you're a Discord user, keep in mind that nearly everything shared on the platform is likely being tracked and accessible to anyone for a price cheaper than a Big Mac. Read 404 Media's original report, and yeah, okay. So there's a full report there. Yeah, that's wild. Absolutely crazy, right? So, yep, my messages, your messages, everybody's messages, TFM's old server, all that stuff. They can look at everything. The Bite. Shockingly, Bored 8's now laying off employees as NFT market disintegrates. To the surprise of no one. To put it simply, Yuga lost its way. Bored Ape Yacht Club developer Yuga Labs is laying off an unspecified number of employees as the appetite for the non-fungible tokens continues to evaporate. It was just a stupid trend. In an announcement on X, formerly Twitter, Yuga Labs CEO Greg Gargamel Solano said that some very hard strategic decisions had unfortunately included a restructuring. To put it simply, Yuga lost its way, Solano wrote. Getting ourselves centered and on the right path means being a smaller, more agile, and crypto-native team. The news comes amid a major downturn in the NFT market, with Bored Apes NFTs that were once worth millions now being sold off for a tiny fraction. But is the bizarre trend really on its way out once and for all, or are NFTs in for an imminent resurgence, as some recent reports suggest? Anything's possible, but common sense suggests that at this point you should only invest with extreme caution. Celebrities who once shelled the drab JPEGs of, or JPGs, whatever you want to call them, of fatigued primates are even being sued by angry investors for hyping up the tokens back in 2021, who argue that they misleadingly promoted the collection. In October, Yuga Labs' Ethereum-based token called ApeCoin dropped to an all-time low, hovering at just over a dollar. Despite rallying in February, the coin has now again lost much of its value. Overall, Bored Ape feels like a shadow of their former selves when they were being sold for millions back in 2021 and 2022. Nowadays, their price floor is barely hanging over $40,000, which still is a chunk of change. Apart from slinging Bored Apes, Yuga Labs has also struggled to launch its video game called Otherside. I remember that. In March, the company opened beta sessions to Bored Ape owners for an eye-searing $75,000. Isn't the Eternum implant $3,500 in the game? For those of you that remember, I think it was $3,500. So they're talking about some special other side open beta game that they were basically selling to people for A lot times that. Like, I'm not real good with math, but let's see. A $3,500 implant versus a $75,000 beta session for a shitty game. Yeah, you're getting ripped off. Despite the hefty price tag, the game appeared to be in a disastrous state, from horrible graphics to abysmal performance. Non-fungible renaissance. In short, you guys in hard mode, as Solano put it in his announcement. The company is going from zero to one once again, and we can't pretend otherwise. That's despite certain signs of life in the NFT market. Just last week, a CryptoPunk NFT sold for a whopping $12.4 million in Ethereum, ranking among the most expensive NFT sales of all time. This is where you have your peak sales, where people are just trying to get rid of the shit. So I don't think it's going to go any higher than that. Is that a sign of what's still to come? As with everything else in the extremely volatile and unpredictable world of crypto, all we can do is wait and watch. And people say their eyes are burning after attending a Bored Ape event. Well, sounds like a scam to me, folks. Not my money! What do we got here? We went to San Francisco's first ever AI simulated party, so you didn't have to. A trip to the Mission Control Hacker House, where a surreal virtual rager was followed by an actual DJ dance party. Now, this is probably boring. On the surface, the Mission Control party didn't feel all that different from your typical Hacker House gathering. The room carried the faint whiff of BO from sweaty hoodies and showers forsaken. The chatter was about securing startup seed funding and the challenges of being a founder. Attendees sipped on high noons and drank beer out of red solo cups. But as guests chatted about the roller coaster ride of startup life, AI versions of themselves were running around a digitized version of the Hacker House displayed on a big screen TV. A leaderboard ranked the most popular avatars throughout the night based on automated conversations they were volleying back and forth. While the bots talked, the humans mostly observed. Billed by organizers as the first ever AI simulated party, the April 13th event drew about 200 people to Mission Control for the standard mix of beer, booze, DJs, and video gamified socializing. Oof. Before their arrival, what about non-video gamified socializing? Like, hey, how you doing? What's up, guys? Oh, hey, nice shirt, bud. Oh, yeah, you're looking great today. You know all this shit, right? Like, video gamified we gotta make video games a way for people to socialize. We are fucked. Before their arrival, as part of the RSVP process, guests were asked to create an online avatar by filling out a brief questionnaire that asked for a summary of their lives in 5 bullet points. The form then spat out an AI-generated agent, or virtual facsimile of each guest who would then roam around a 90s bitmap-style version of Mission Control's floor plan and smooze with other stimulated partygoers before the actual in-real-life party popped off. Even before I physically arrived at the event, my bot had already made acquaintances with an artsy kindred spirit named Joker, who had a lot of creativity and adventures, and an oddly named fellow called Bench, who my bot reported as intriguing but overwhelming at times. The fuck is going on? My avatar, or AI avatar rather, who resembled a mini red-haired Princess Peach, had also apparently started a few dance-offs and navigated through virtual rooms dedicated to deep conversations. Man, if the AI is having a better time than the people, then you know that was a shitty fucking party. Well, we got a little bit of country here. Deep conversations, AI and wearables, tech talk showdowns, and shared life stories, restartup successes. Okay. I was amused but also confused. Was this the future of in-person partying or a semi-dystopian facsimile of fun? The technology behind this first ever AI simulated party is the brainchild of AI reality TV founder Edgar Hound, who quit his job in France and moved to San Francisco earlier this year to grow the startup. While the company is still in its early stages, the idea behind it, inspired by a similar situation that had 25 AI agents painting, writing, and going to work in a simulated world called Smallville, is to create a virtual world where an AI avatar version of oneself can live, roam, and socialize 24/7. Eventually, Han hopes to create an entirely virtual version of San Francisco where AI bots run around the city all hours on your behalf, pre-screening potential friends, lovers, or co-founders. If your bot hits it off over virtual coffee and philosophical discussion, then maybe you would want to meet that bot's human master in real life, Hound explained. What? You could have your AI go on a boat trip or a road trip, build a company with someone, he said. The party at Mission Control aimed to test run the technology at a more manageable scale and attempt to solve the inevitable awkwardness of showing up at a party and not being sure if you'll click with anyone. You usually have those times where you go to a party and you talk to five people and it ends up being very boring, Owen said. I think having this as a first step enables you to know exactly before the party who might potentially be the people you'll get along with the best and help amplify the experience. Sorry. While hundreds of people streamed into Mission Control throughout the night, the affair, which eventually evolved into an actual, not virtual, raging DJ dance party, was not without its kinks. Kevin Fisher, the CEO and founder of Open Souls, a venture creating digital AI souls, recounted an awkward interaction between his avatar and a bot made by a venture capitalist. What the fuck are these people doing? They have too much goddamn money and time. So my bot went and pitched a VC on my company, Fisher wrote in a DM, and came away thinking he had made his best friend and was going to close the funding round tomorrow. The VC's bot was kind of crazy, classic founder/VC interaction. I indexed too hard on chill, added Josh Cho, who participated in the party virtually. My virtual version ended up telling another builder to chill out and not talk about work. That felt weird. The simulation crashed a few times, and some attendees struggled to find the human versions of the avatars whom the simulation recommended would make a good conversation partner. While some partygoers chose to give their avatars their real names, others chose darknet-friendly pseudonyms like Blockchain or Deepfates, or the mysterious nondescriptive bench my bot had bumped into earlier. Without photos attached to our names and our bot avatars, it was nearly impossible to tell who might be who. Name tags or some more clues may have helped, observed Teresa Tikova, who heads up developer relations at an AI software company and accidentally created 9 different avatars that night. But the host decided to forego sticky name tags so commonplace at tech networking events. They wanted to give the party a more organic feel. It was actually a question we debated a lot, said Sarabi Todi, a resident of Mission Control who helped to organize the event. We wanted the party to have a very organic, not like a networking event, feel. And ultimately, I think it was really fun to watch people go around and be like, oh my god, my bot talked to your bot. And, you know, create those conversations in real life. Other than that, the actual party was just a normal party, said Tiskova. Or as normal as it can be in San Francisco. I mean, it sounded like a real happening fucking time, guys, didn't it? I don't know, man. That sounds fucking awful. I mean, surely it looks cool in this AI-generated image there, but as far as the actual fucking show, it's not that. People, I don't know. She seems kind of bored, and she seems really glued to other shit. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't that happening. Maybe it wasn't that great. Let's see. What else have we got here? Okay, this is kind of interesting. Novel attack against virtually all VPN apps neuters their entire purpose. Tunnel vision vulnerability has existed since 2002 and may already be known to attackers. Researchers have devised an attack against nearly all virtual private network applications that forces them to send and receive some or all traffic outside of the encrypted tunnel designed to protect it from snooping or tampering. Tunnel vision, as the researchers have named their attack, largely negates the entire purpose of and selling point of VPNs, which is to encapsulate, incoming and outgoing internet traffic in an encrypted tunnel and to cloak the user's IP address. The researchers believe it affects all VPN applications when they're connected to a hostile network, and that there are no ways to prevent such attacks except when the user's VPN runs on Linux or Android. They also said their attack technique may have been possible since 2002 and may already have been discovered and used in the wild since then. The effect of a tunnel vision is the victim's traffic is now decloaked and being routed through the attacker directly, a video demonstration explained. The attacker can read, drop, or modify the leaked traffic, and the victim maintains their connection to both the VPN and the internet. The attack works by manipulating the DHCP server that allocates IP addresses to devices trying to connect to the local network. A setting known as Option 121 allows the DHCP server to override default routing routes and send VPN traffic through a local IP address that initiates the encrypted tunnel. By using Option 121 to route VPN traffic through the DHCP server, the attack diverts the data to the DHCP server itself, researchers from Leviathan Security explained. Our technique is to run a DHCP server on the same network as a targeted VPN user and also set our DHCP configuration to use itself as a gateway. When the traffic hits our gateway, we use traffic forwarding rules on the DHCP server to pass through traffic through to a legitimate gateway while we snoop on it. We use DHCP option 121 to set a route on the VPN user's routing table. The route we set is arbitrary, and we can also set multiple routes if needed. By pushing routes that are more specific than a /0 CIDR range that most VPNs use, we can make routing rules that have a higher priority than the routes for all for the virtual interface the VPN creates. We can set multiple /1 routes to recreate the 0.0.0.0.0.0/0 all traffic rules set by most VPNs. Pushing a route also means that the network traffic will be sent over the same interface as the DHCP server instead of the virtual network interface. This is intended functionality that isn't clearly stated in the RFC. Therefore, for the routes we push, it is never encrypted by the VPN's virtual interface, but instead transmitted by the network interface that is talking to the DHCP server. As an attacker, we can select which IP addresses go over the tunnel and which addresses go over the network interface talking to our DHCP server. So that's kind of how it works there, guys. We now have traffic being transmitted outside the VPN's encrypted tunnel. This technique can also be used against an already established VPN connection once a VPN user's host needs to renew a lease from our DHCP server. We can artificially create that scenario by setting a short lease time in the DHCP license so the user updates their routing table more frequently. In addition, the VPN control channel is still intact because it already uses the physical interface for its communication. And our testing, the VPN always continued to report as connected, and the kill switch was never engaged to drop our VPN connection. The attack can most effectively be carried out by a person who has administrative control over the network the target is connecting to. In that scenario, the attacker configures the DHCP server to use option 121. It's also possible for people who can connect to the network as an unprivileged user to perform the attack by setting up their own rogue DHCP server. The attack allows some or all traffic to be routed through the unencrypted tunnel. In either case, the VPN application will report that all data is being sent through the protected connection. Any traffic that's diverted away from this tunnel will not be encrypted by the VPN, and the internet IP address viewable by the remote user will belong to the network the VPN user is connected to, rather than one designated by the VPN app. Interestingly, Android is the only operating system that fully immunizes VPN apps from this attack because it doesn't implement option 121. For all other OSs, there's no complete fixes. When apps run on Linux, there's a setting that minimizes the effects, but even then, tunnel vision can be used to exploit a side channel that can be used to de-anonymize destination traffic and perform targeted denial of service attacks. Network firewalls can also be configured to deny inbound and outbound traffic to and from the physical interface. This remedy is problematic for two reasons. One, a VPN user connecting to an untrusted network has no ability to control the firewall, and two, it opens the same side channel present with the Linux mitigation. The most effective fixes are to run the VPN inside of a virtual machine whose network adapter isn't in bridge mode to connect the VPN to the internet through the Wi-Fi network of a cellular device. The research from Leviathan security researchers Lizzie Moriarty and Danny Kranz is available here. I think it's important to clarify the use of the term VPN here. This affects VPN's use for This affects VPN's use for anonymizing internet traffic or for geofence defeating on streaming services and such. It should not impact VPNs used to access private networks via the internet. For example, if you use a VPN to connect to your home network and access machines inside your LAN that are not directly exposed to the internet, this won't affect that at all. It only affects VPN setups that redirect all internet traffic via the VPN. You may also be able to partially defeat it by not using a /0 route. You could instead do 4 routing entries with /2 networks. Of course, if the hacker sets up their network the same way, this could also be defeated. A lot of comments there. I mean, there's a lot of chatter on this one. But yeah, it's not quite good. Not quite good if you've got a VPN. Hackers are finding out how to get around those. All right. Alright, here we go. Chinese humanoid factory video plunges back into the Uncanny Valley. Well, we like the Uncanny Valley here at Grimm's Dungeon of Degeneracy. We have an entire segment devoted to the Uncanny Valley called Grimm's Uncanny Valley. Let's look at these girls. Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with her. I like the red hair and the red suit. Ooh, yeah, I like that. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, she's looking a little too Chinese. Like, she doesn't look Chinese, but she looks like hardcore Chinese. And she looks more just general Asian. Yeah. Okay, so there's some words here. Still frame from a video shot inside a humanoid robot factory in China. X-Robots. Yep, that's the level we're operating at here. X-Robots provides enterprises with one-stop services from model construction. Boy, they didn't do that right. There's an O missing. Appearance, positioning, manufacturing, operation, and promotion. In the era of smart manufacturing, every company can have its own virtual spokesperson, providing stronger impetus for corporate brands and market competition. They are glorified animatronics like TFM told you. The monkey is laughing. Do you hear him? I do. He said they're going to be animatronics for a while. They're going to be janky animatronics. But damn it. That janky animatronic might actually be able to give TFM a hug. A 20-second video from inside a Chinese humanoid robot factory is causing some consternation today around social media. It shows a range of highly realistic-looking, partially skinned humanoids under construction. The video, uploaded by user MayMay4515, is uncredited, but shows several moving androids with human-like hair and skin. In stark contrast to most of the general-purpose humanoids we normally cover, which are designed to look like robots rather than trying to fool anyone. Here, there are rows of pretty cyborg ladies, don't you forget! Disembodied heads on stands, fully human-like presenter types wearing shirts and pants, and a surreal tree of humanoid arms flexing and twirling their white-fingered hands in concert. It looks for all the world like a grittier version of Westworld's backstage workshop. Whoever took the video says something in Chinese at the beginning, which translates roughly to, before that, the employees had already started mass production. So what are we actually looking at here? As it turns out, the arm tree is the giveaway. Chinese company X Robots, formerly DS Doll, has shown it before in expo displays. According to the company's translated website, it builds efficient and friendly smart guide services for government agencies, medical institutions, and service retail industries. They're not ready to fuck you yet, guys. It's going to be for businesses first. To show off its wares, X Robots runs a Future Science and Technology Museum. Look, I'm just saying it, okay? Don't be getting, you know, oh, I gotta check my money in my stocks. Hold on. Don't check your money in your stocks. Unless you're a business, this thing is not gonna be ready to give you pleasure on demand. You're just gonna have to wait. Just a little more. If you're of age, you know, just keep on kicking. You know, push yourself. It'll happen one day. Anyway, to show off its wares, X-Robots runs an X-Future Science and Technology Museum in the city of Dalian, which looks to us like somewhat like a robotic version of Madame Tussauds, a wax museum, with Einstein and Edison among the animatronic characters on site. Yes, they are correctly calling these what they are, animatronic characters, like Disney. Like Five Nights at Freddy's. Well, I mean, I'm being honest. There's certainly no shame here about leaning into fleshy titillation. Extra care has clearly been put into the boobular fembots. Absolutely! I'd call them boobular. Boy, we need to make that a word in dictionary. Down to the goosebumps on their silicone leg skin. Yes, sir. Look at those legs. Not a hint of cellulite there, folks. Okay. The museum allows visitors to drive a humanoid head with their own facial expressions using motion capture, and there's a rotating dais you can stand on for 3 minutes to be 3D scanned, after which there may be some sort of facility to have body parts 3D printed, as shown in the following video from China Global Television Network. Ah, just like Revy said! The idea is to demonstrate the company's ability to produce custom animatronic mascots and presenters for corporate clients. Again, they're not ready to fuck you yet. But let's go ahead and look at this this video. So I'm going to pause my my stuff here. Let's go into this. Let's look at this. Hold on. Nobody can hear it. Grim, I can't hear it. All right, just give me a fucking minute. But then I'm putting it back down because I'm not gonna talk over the music being loud. Let's do it.
Pursuing closest resemblance to humans. The EX Future Science and Technology Museum.
There she is!
To integrate research and development, design, manufacturing, and display.
Entering a scene from a sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. Same thing they made the dolls out of. Yep, that's basic doll technology, yeah.
Here, you can talk to historical figures, experience the thrill of a mechanical battle, interact with a robot, and even customize an android of your own.
I'll stand here for 3 minutes, I'll have my physical data collected in the device.
China on you now.
Processing the data, parts of me will be printed by a 3D printer.
What?
To customize me. The current products are mainly for exhibition and educational purposes.
Yeah.
But the museum is considering to introduce bionic humanoid robots to the service sector and make customized personal robots a reality in the future.
In the future. Future, guys. That's a couple of years from now. Not tomorrow. I'm sorry. Just gotta be real. Grim, how many times are you gonna tell us? Why are you gonna destroy our hope? Because, what is... Oh, you guys didn't watch it, did you? Chris Hemsworth said in that movie, his Dementis, hope! There is no hope here! No. But, yeah, it's... I mean, again, it's gonna be a while. So no, dear, dribbling hordes of social media commenters, you're not looking at your new AI girlfriends. I mean, did you want me to say it or did you want him to say it? So no, dear, dribbling hordes of social media commenters, you're not looking at your new AI girlfriends yet. You're also not looking at a company here that seems interested in useful humanoids. You're looking at an advanced animatronics operation. The video is attention-grabbing because it is a company designed to grab attention. There's not much meat in this sandwich. But the humanoid space is, in general, is absolutely teeming with meat, many meaty sandwiches in mid-2024. This is a breakout year for general-purpose AI-powered robotic workers in Chinese companies such as Unitree, UBTech, Baidu, Astrobot, Limex, Kepler, the Beijing Humanoid Robot Innovation Center, and others are making genuine strides towards robot laborers capable of learning and executing useful tasks. Indeed, China doesn't seem to be lagging far behind North American companies like Tesla, Figure, Sanctuary, Agility, Epitronic, and others, and we're very much looking forward to learning more about what the granddaddy of this field, Boston Dynamics, is cooking up with its next generation Atlas robot, which ditches its highly athletic predecessor's hydraulic motors for electric actuators and moves like no other humanoid we've ever seen. So don't get distracted by sexy videos, or do, I guess if that's your bag, but the humanoid revolution is truly kicking in the second gear in 2024, and in conjunction with AI, it promises to fundamentally change human society like few technologies before it. Yeah, people often confuse animatronics for robotics. Boston Dynamics robots and these animatronic robots are both quite impressive, but for different reasons. Even somewhat realistic face and hand movements are difficult to reproduce, and these do a good job. BD's use of AI and other tools to make self-mobile robots that can react to an environment is also very impressive. It seems likely that these two sides of robotics will come together in the near future, but we'll see. As for people confusing animatronics with robots, that's not confusion. Animatronics is a kind of robotics, though, of course, not all robotics is animatronics. So there you go, guys. Again, beautiful, right? But you just have to wait. You can't hurry, love. No, you'll just have to wait. Okay. Scientists used a supercomputer to find out when we're all gonna die. Researchers have used a supercomputer to predict when not only humanity will come to an end, but all other mammals. I said all. A team of researchers have asked the supercomputer, when will humanity completely perish? And the answer they received not only impacts humans, but everything else on the planet. The researchers penned a study published in the scientific journal Nature Geoscience, where they explained that compiling factors such as solar radiation and landmass configurations can lead to a prediction of when all landmass and mammalian life will be eradicated from the surface of the Earth. The team found that in as little as 250 million years, Earth's tectonic plates would converge to form Earth's next supercontinent, Pangaea Ultima. As little as 250 million years! The scientists write the creation and decay of Pangaea Ultima will produce extreme levels of CO2, particularly from volcanic rifting and outgassing. The intense levels of CO2 in Earth's atmosphere, combined with the heat of the sun, will make Earth unable to sustain many forms of landmass life. Within these kind of conditions, humanity won't be able to grow any food, with the supercomputer finding the temperatures would increase to between 40 and 50 degrees Celsius, which is approximately 104 to 122 degrees Fahrenheit. Hmm. The overall combination of higher CO2 degassing and alternate continental weatherability results in a prediction of 621 parts per million, range of 410 to 816 parts per million CO2, or a range of approximately 1.5 to 3 times pre-industrial found in the study. Given mammals' continued survival, predicted background levels of 410 to 816 parts per million combined with increased F will probably lead to a climate tipping point in their mass extinction. The results also highlight how global land mass configuration and F whatever play a critical role in planetary habitability. We can read. Oh, I can read. I got a new word. No. Okay, well, there you go. Oh! Tesla has released this new Optimus humanoid robot video that creates some controversy. Tesla has released a new video of a prototype of Optimus, its humanoid robot, and it created some controversy as some disagree about how impressive it is. Last month, Elon Musk gave an update on the timing for the rollout of Optimus. The CEO says that Optimus is already performing factory tasks inside its lab. He believes that Optimus will be used to perform real tasks inside actual Tesla factories by the end of the year. Well, we'll see. Furthermore, Musk said he believes that Tesla could start selling its Optimus humanoid robots to customers outside of the company by the end of 2025. This is a very aggressive timeline, nothing unusual for Musk at Tesla, but the company has gained some credibility on the project in recent months. Late last year, Tesla unveiled Optimus Gen 2, a new generation of its humanoid robot that should be able to take over repetitive tasks from humans. The new prototype showed a lot of improvements compared to previously underwhelming versions of the robot, and it gave some credibility to the project, which was laughed off by many when first announced with a dancer disguised as a robot for a visual aid a few years ago. However, everything Tesla showed in the Gen 2 update was done through teleoperation of the robots. There's that word again. Now, Tesla has released a quick update video about Optimus, and it shows the robot performing some tasks with end-to-end neural nets. Let's go ahead and look at that, shall we? Just go ahead and pause this. I don't think we're necessarily going to need to... Optimus has been busy learning useful tasks lately. Its end-to-end neural network was trained to sort battery cells. It runs in real time on the bot's FSD computer, using only 20 cameras, hand tactile, and 4 sensors. Optimus balances on its legs while the net drives the entire upper body. Precise movements are required with very little margins during insertions. And the neural net automatically targets the next free slot. Optimus also recovers automatically from failures. Autonomously, sorry. The training data was collected via human teleoperation and scaled across our fleet for a variety of tasks. Optimus is currently being tested at one of our factories while a continuously decreasing rate of human interventions. Is also now taking regular walks around the office. Not bad! Look at him walk!
They're not gonna walk! We can't get robots to walk! It's walking, y'all! I'm walking. Yes, I am. I'm walking. You told me wheels! Well, looks like he's walking pretty damn good to me!
I'll be damned. We're going to have these walking waifus before we know it. Lord, I might only be 50. In the video, Tesla shows Optimus moving battery cells. Well, we know. We watched the video. Tesla does share a shot of engineers training the robots with what appears to be VR systems. Teleoperations, as Suzanne Gildert talked about. However, some believe that this shows Tesla is pretty early in its software development for the robot. Tesla says the video shows two different stages of development. At 044, the moves are controlled by a human and the Optimus robot simply copies them. This appears to be a training stage, but there may be also an autonomous stage where the robot operates without human whatever. If I hit show more, it's going to bring me to Twitter. Milan Kovac, the engineer in charge of Optimus at Tesla, also shared some comments along with the video update. Over the past couple of months, our awesome manufacturing team has built more bots for us to work on and collect AI data from. We've trained and deployed a neural net, allowing Optimus to start doing useful tasks such as picking up battery cells coming down a conveyor. The engineer confirmed the new neural net used to power the humanoid robot. We've trained and deployed a neural net, allowing Optimus to start doing useful tasks such as picking up battery cells. We've looked at this, though. To be honest, I wouldn't worry too much about the status of software development. Very reasonable stance, given how well Tesla has delivered on software promises in the past. As a whole, it's clear that the AI space is moving ultra fast right now, and it feels like the right time to develop general purpose humanoid robots to take advantage of it. No, the AI space is not moving ultra fast right now. The large language model space is moving very quickly right now, but that's not generalized AI. It's just an algorithm that spits out what it thinks the next word in a sentence should be, given a training set of other sentences. DALL-E is pretty impressive too, but again, that's a specialized system for images, not generalized AI. Suggesting that a few purpose-built AI processes working reasonably well but still wrong very often means the entire AI space is moving ultra fast, just shows a lack of understanding what these systems do or how reliably they can be converted to other tasks. It's either ignorance or willful self-delusion. Kovac says that Tesla is now working to make Optimus faster as well as capable of dealing with more adverse terrains. Electric's take. To be honest, I wouldn't worry too much about the status of software development. As a whole, it's clear that AI space is moving ultra fast right now and feels like the right time to develop general-purpose humanoid robots to take advantage of it. Even if Tesla isn't the one to solve AI, it is valuable to have a hardware package that can do lots of things with the right AI. I can see Optimus becoming that thanks to Tesla's experience deploying efficient and affordable AI hardware and power electronics in vehicles. So there you go! Expand. Very reasonable stance. Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, it's doing what a lot of other robots are. But robots are definitely walking. That doesn't seem to be a problem for robots anymore. They're walking somehow. Implant by Elon Musk Neuralink suffers setback after threads retract from patient's brain. Musk Brain Technology startup said the issue cropped up with its first human brain implant weeks after it was inserted. Now, there's only one thing I have to say about this. This is what happens when you use a 1.0. It's not ready yet. How many 1.0 games have you played and they're not finished? Like they're missing something or they're glitching? So, you're really going to wait. Like, you're going to try the very first one. Mr. Rich Man here. You're going to try the very first one. Like, I wish I could talk to this guy. It's like, alright, hold on. You play a lot of video games. And absolutely, I can confirm this. Because when this guy first got his implant, he used it to play Slay the Spire. What was Slay the Spire like when you got it on 1.0? How many glitches or bugs did you run into? Oh! Good point, mate. Maybe I should wait. Yes! Maybe you should fucking wait. And, you know, you usually wait until a couple of patches are down the road. Especially since you're putting something in your goddamn brain. Like, it's not just, like, software that, okay, if it's bad, I'll just uninstall it. No, you're putting it in your head, sir. It's in your head! You know? Come on, now. Don't let me go into... fucking zombie here. Elon Musk brain technology startup Neuralink said Wednesday that an issue cropped up with his first human brain implant weeks after it was inserted into a patient. The company revealed in a blog post that in weeks following the patient's surgery in January, a number of the implant's connective threads retracted from the brain, causing a reduction in the signals the device could capture. This didn't mess up his brain, but it just made it so it couldn't do half of the shit that it was supposed to do. Neuralink provided a few other details about the problem, did not disclose what might have caused the threads to retract. It did say, however, that it modified an algorithm to be more sensitive to neural population signals, meaning it was able to improve how the patient's brain signals were detected and translated. Neuralink's first human patient, Nolan Arbaugh, 29, lost all movement and sensation in his arms and legs after a diving accident in 2016. Nerling's N1 device, about the size of a quarter, is designed to be fully implanted on the skull. It is connected to the brain's motor cortex through 64 ultra-thin threads with tiny electrodes that pick up neural signals from the patient. It's not known whether the retracted threads posed any safety concerns for Arbaugh at the time. In March, the company hosted a live stream during which Arbaugh moved a cursor across the laptop screen and played online chess using only his thoughts. In other videos released by the company, Arbaugh appeared to be playing the racing game Mario Kart with the brain chip. The latest update comes less than a week after Neuralink co-founder Dr. Benjamin Rappaport suggested on an episode of the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast last Friday that he left the company because of safety concerns. Rappaport, a neurosurgeon, co-founded Neuralink with Musk and other scientists in 2016. He later left to start a new company called Precision Neuroscience. I've pretty much devoted my entire professional life to bringing neural interfaces from the world of science to the world of medicine. But I've felt that in order to move to the world of medicine and technology, safety is paramount, he said on the podcast. It was not the first time the company has faced controversy. Activist groups and internal staff complaints have alleged that Neuralink mistreated some of the animals used in experiments. We have read those studies. They are fucking horrific. A federal investigation did not turn up any evidence of any violations beyond an adverse surgical event in 2019 that the company reported itself, according to Reuters. Neuralink won approval last year from the FDA to conduct its first human clinical study. It has been developing a brain implant that would allow people, including patients with severe paralysis, to control computers, phones, or other external devices using their thoughts. It's got some time to go, though, folks. It's not ready yet. Oh, what happened to our music? Let's put it back on. There we go. Alright, so let's go a little bit deeper into this. I don't want to cover the same article twice, but let's just see here. Alright, so here's a little bit more information about it. So there's your chip. That's what it looks like. Man. It does look like a quarter. Neuralink's chip contains 1,024 electrodes across 64 threads that are thinner than a strand of hair. So you want to see it? I kind of do want to see it. Let's see what it looks like, guys. Oh, so he's playing, you know, chess.
Attempted movement. So a lot of what we started out with was attempting to move. So I would attempt to move, say, my right hand, left, right, forward, back. And from there, I think it just became intuitive for me to start imagining the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on the cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere in the screen, and it would move where I wanted it to.
It's neat. I don't care about the eyeshadow. Gen Z thinks eyeshadow is a Gen X and millennial thing. I like eyeshadow. I like my women with eyeshadow. You mean they're gonna do, oh, we don't want eyeshadow anymore. Well, goodbye all the goth chicks then, I guess. Anyway, back to things that matter. However, in the weeks since the astounding video, a number of threads retracted from Arbaugh's brain. I'm telling you, you'll have to get a robot just so she can have eyeshadow now. That's where we're fucking going to. That's it. Another thing for me to be angry at and throw something. Anyway, resulting in a net decrease in the number of effective electrodes, Neuralink said in a blog post Wednesday early reported on by the Wall Street Journal. As a result, Neuralink was not able to measure how effectively its system of electrodes and threads was performing. It's unclear how many threads are detached. In response to this change, we modified the recording algorithm to be more sensitive to neural population signals, improved the techniques to translate these signals into cursor movements, and enhance the user interface, Neuralink added, insisting that the refinement will enhance the accuracy of Arbaugh's ability to control the cursor's bits per second. Bits per second, according to the company, is a standard measure for speed and accuracy. These refinements produce a rapid and sustained improvement in BPS that has now superseded Nolan's initial performance, Nerling said. The company, which recently changed its home base from Delaware to Nevada after Musk spat with a Delaware judge who invalidated his $56 billion pay package at Tesla, considered removing the implant, but the problem hasn't posed a direct risk to Arbaugh's safety, the journal reported. Even so, the possibility of removing Arbaugh's implant, a so-called explanation, was floated. People familiar with the matter told the journal. Hold on, that did not fucking sound right. Even so, the possibility of removing Arbaugh's implant, a so-called explanation, was floated. People familiar with the matter told the journal. Nerling did not immediately respond to the post's request for comment. That's just a horribly worded sentence. He became the first human test subject of the chip developed by the Musk-owned company when a robot surgeon plugged the implant into his brain. It wasn't immediately clear how many others will participate in the trial or where they'll be held. Despite the snafu, Arbaugh reportedly is using Neuralink's BCI system for around 8 hours a day on weekends, or weekdays rather, and as many as 10 hours on the weekends. Now I can literally just lie in bed and play to my heart's content, he said in March livestream, or at least until the battery of his chip dies. What happens when it really dies? Nerling, founded in 2016, has mostly kept info about its tech and human trials under wraps, prompting calls for greater transparency. For his part, Arbaugh said he has signed on to try the implant because he wanted to be a part of something that I felt like is going to change the world. Setbacks were to be expected. This tech will only get better and better. I recommend all involved in bringing this life-saving technology to market. Oh, man. The amount of negative news published about this man is very telling. I don't know what you are doing today, but this man is trying to help the extremely disabled, doing his best to preserve a platform allowing ultimate free speech. Yeah, you can say faggot on Twitter. Like, you literally can. I will say Melanie Mack and with Quartering. Talk about him every once in a while. But they use faggot all the time. He actually has a meme with Melanie Mack saying the word faggot on it. So you can actually say that. There's a lot of things that you can still say. And it does have a lot of people on there. I mean, just because people don't agree with Musk doesn't mean they're not using his platform. Because there's a lot of like far left people on there, definitely. There's far left people that you didn't think would even want anything to do with Musk. But they're on there because they know that they have free speech. And same thing with people on far right, and of course people in kind of the center or the libertarian like me, we're on there too. Classical liberal, I guess I could call myself. What did you say? Classical liberal, libertarian, whatever. And it says, in an effort to preserve the human race, building high-quality electric vehicles for the masses and trying to dig tunnels underground to increase the efficiency at which humans can travel and operate. Somehow, by the media reports, he is a failure despite the high-level goals and achievement he's working towards. Well, he dared stray from the leftist plantation and groupthink. Now he must be destroyed. I like to think I do pretty cool work in smart home design and have designed systems to help disabled and handicapped people with voice control of their homes. That's cool. Automation, etc., on many occasions, but Musk is light years away from that. The fact that the most visionary mind in the world, now an American, is dragged on a daily basis by people mostly by TDS, Trump Derangement System. It's gonna be a system. Trump Derangement Syndrome suffers on government assistance offers a good glimpse into how far we have fallen as a country. And it is pretty damn fucking bad. Yes, that guy is still banned on the platform. I don't know why that is. I mean, hate speech, I guess you can't do that. I don't know. It's a weird situation. There is a shitload of porn on it, though. I'll say that. There's a lot of non-safe-for-work devs on there. And safe-for-work devs, too. Very free speech platform. Okay, back to the music. And we do have some more articles. Ooh, but not that loud. I'm not gonna compete over that. Okay, so our next article is... That's pretty good. It sounds like something from Mega Man. Phil Spencer and the Battle for Xbox's Soul. Once a scrappy startup with a buttoned-up institution, Xbox and its longtime leader are now struggling to resist buckling under the weight of being the very thing they once stood against. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Xbox stepped on a rake again. For the umpteenth time in the past decade, Microsoft has found itself on the wrong end of bad news, and as usual, it's self-inflicted. Just as Team Green was starting to gather some positive momentum, Fallout is the biggest show on TV and boosting all the Fallout games along with it. The launch of Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 is imminent, remember this is before it came out, and it may be the very kind of prestige single-player narrative-driven third-play action-adventure first-person. Let me try that again, because they have like a million fucking words there. And it may be the very kind of prestige single-player narrative-driven third-person action-adventure the brand has long lacked. I mean, spoiler alert, it wasn't. The next Xbox showcase was announced for June 9th, where we might finally see the long-anticipated next entry in the Gears of War series, the next Call of Duty Black Ops, which is 6, and more. Xbox brass torched the morale of customers and quite possibly its own devs alike by announcing the closure of 3 studios, Tango, Arcane, and Alpha Dog, and the consideration of a 4th Roundhouse. Fans were quick to point back to recent and now hypocritical quotes from the Xbox executives, such as marketing boss Aaron Greenberg saying, "Last year, that Just Axe developer Tango Gameworks Hi-Fi Rush was a breakout hit for us and our players in all key measurements and expectations. We couldn't be happier with what the team at Tango Gameworks delivered with this surprise release." They don't give a shit. And the 2021 Xbox documentary, Power On, Sarah Bond said the leadership team has asked themselves how to learn from and not repeat the mistake of acquiring a studio. In this case, original Fable developer Lionhead, only to later shut them down. And 1 year ago, in the wake of Redfall's disastrous launch, Xbox boss Phil Spencer said, "One thing I won't do is push against the creative aspirations of our team. When a team like Rare wants to do Sea of Thieves, when a team like Obsidian wants to do Grounded, when Tango Gameworks wants to do Hi-Fi Rush, when everyone thought they were probably doing The Evil Within 3, I want to give the teams the creative platform to go and push their ability to push their aspirations. Please leave The Evil Within series alone. I don't need her story. It's fine." At best, those once reassuring quotes ring hollow today. At worst, they're outright lies. We've come a long way from Xbox fans once proudly decreeing in Phil we trust and posting Photoshop Dark Knight-esque I believe in Phil Spencer buttons. Really? Awfully, Bloomberg reports that Microsoft might not be done making cuts, so this may very well get worse before it gets better. For devs, that would mean further job losses, and for gamers, that reportedly might mean another possible game Xbox Game Pass Ultimate price increase. Look forward to it. So how did we get here? Why can't Xbox stop tripping over its own damn feet? And with the Xbox organization growing so massive over the past half decade, and its reach extending not just to consoles, but to any device capable of playing video games, can the soul of Xbox even be saved? I spoke to 2 former Xbox employees separately, and both lamented the current state of the business. One told me prior to this week's awful studio closures, "I had lengthy conversation with a bunch of founders of Xbox, and we all came to the same conclusion. It's no longer Xbox, but Microsoft Gaming. Ouch." The other chatted with me at length about the Bethesda bloodbath and believes Xbox is now too big to quickly or easily get its house in order. There's just too much surface area. You have effectively 3 huge companies at play. Microsoft never really finished the integration with Bethesda. And Activision is like 3 times the size that Xbox was. They added that Xbox 360 launched with a few hundred people. Last I heard, Xbox is now almost 30,000 people. And that growth has led to, in this Xbox veteran's opinion, increased oversight and meddling from further up the Microsoft food chain. The reason this seems so inconsistent with previous Xbox leadership team statements is that these decisions probably aren't being made by Phil. This is all getting dictated by Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella and Microsoft CFO Amy Hood. And it all stems from Activision acquisition. The long-tenured Xboxer continued, "The situation Xbox was in when they made this call was much different. They couldn't keep consoles in stock, making money hand over fist with Game Pass growth. The Activision acquisition seemed like a no-brainer. Now console sales are down. Post-COVID recession. Game Pass slowing. The acquisition was more costly and time-consuming than anyone expected. And the focus on fighting the FTC probably cost them time that they would have spent thinking through the people and studio implications." Wow. It's a lot of shit. It's a lot of shit. 100% believe this is a board level decision. Xbox was a huge profit center, so Tataya approved a huge merger. Now games are slowing and Microsoft stock is skyrocketing, and there's no way Tataya is going to let Xbox drag it down. This is all my opinion, of course, but I'm fairly certain these are not decisions being made only by Xbox leadership. That's not to absolve Spencer for his role in this, unlike the tone-deaf won't someone think of the multi-millionaire executive's response of former Xbox higher-up Mike Ybarra. He is, after all, the person in charge of the entire organization. The buck stops with him. The Bethesda and Activision Blizzard acquisitions happen on his watch. As such, he is no more shielded from criticism for being, by most accounts, including my own, a nice guy than the star professional athlete is for underperforming on the field court despite regularly signing autographs for kids before games. But no matter who's to blame for the weight of Activision Blizzard seemingly tipping Xbox scales out of balance, and it's now fair to wonder if and how Spencer can save Xbox's soul. Is Xbox a gaming brand that means anything to gamers anymore? Can it stand toe-to-toe with Sony and Nintendo? The answer to this question is no! But if the answer is yes, then what defines Xbox? Is it Game Pass? Seems to be. Is it big executive franchises like Halo, Forza, Gears of War, Fable, and maybe, should they end up being exclusive, The Elder Scrolls, Fallout, and Doom? Is it gaming anywhere seamlessly through PC, mobile, cloud, and the handheld support that's invisible to the end user? Could it be all of these? Should it be all of these? Or does Xbox then become a jack of all trades, master of none? After all, when you think of either PlayStation or Nintendo, you arguably think of one thing and one thing alone. Consistently incredible exclusive games, that's it. I don't think of PlayStation with that, but I think of Nintendo like that. If the board is pushing Xbox in this direction, will Spencer push back? These decisions, no matter who's making them, are costing Xbox an incredible amount of both talent and community trust. Spencer knows that, and it falls to him to fix it. To this point, I've argued that up until this week, Spencer's 10-year term as head of Xbox could be summed as such. Gamer-first initiatives like backwards compatibility, accessibility, crossplay, and Game Pass, but he has yet to deliver either the single breakthrough blockbuster game that captures the zeitgeist, or the steady flow of high-quality exclusive games that breed loyalty to a platform. Where's the games, man? Now, though, he will likely be remembered primarily by how he handles this movement. Can he organize a five-company monolith, Xbox, Bethesda, Activision, Blizzard, and King, into a single entity that makes both gamers and shareholders happy? Is that even possible? No. If he can't, the Activision Blizzard King acquisition may ultimately prove to have been more trouble than it is worth. Whew. What a fucking mess. Makes you not want to play the new games. But you know what? There's plenty of old games. And if you're having trouble and you can't get them on Steam for some reason, I'm going to show you a little site that I trust. Let's see what we got here. It should be, yes, My Abandonware. Because old games were better. Now, is it legal? I don't know, but a lot of people are using them. Because, you know, Microsoft Flight Simulator, you can't get that anymore. You know, a lot of these games, you can't get anymore. Doom 2, Recoil, they're not even bringing them back. Emperor Battle for Doom, there's people that want to play that again. I mean, you can find a lot of good stuff on here. Top Download, Civilization, Need for Speed 2, a lot of people want to play that. Oregon Trail. House of the Dead, Prince of Persia, Silent Hill 2, Restless Dreams, House of the Dead 2. There's a lot of games that people are downloading off here. It's a pretty big site. You can check all years. All the way to, what, 2017? Really? There's some games from there. Mega Man Legends 3, the Prologue. Look, see all that stuff? Original. Now, some are fan games, but, you know, we have Abuse. Remember Abuse? A lot of classic stuff. X-Men Origins Wolverine Uncaged Edition. You're not gonna find it on Steam. It's not there. They took it off. They're assholes. But you can still play it. Harry Potter. A lot of the Harry Potter games are gone. House of the Dead 3. Need for Speed Most Wanted. All your Need for Speeds are gone. I mean, if you want them, there you go. You download them and you try to get them to work. Sometimes you may have to go to, what is it? PC Gaming Wiki. Why are we going here? Because this game right here. Let's look it up. X-Men Origins Wolverine, right? Hold on. That's Grim Ken type. Promise you. We should be able to. Oh, well, I guess you have to type it in like this. Well, all right, so maybe not. Doesn't seem like it's letting me, do I just hit the search? Oh, okay. Doesn't seem like you can do, you have to log, okay. So you have to log in, but there's a trick. So watch this. You gotta make Google sing a little bit. So here we go. All right, so that's not what we want. But there we go. Here's the uncaged edition. If it's going to let me look at it. It might. Don't know. Weird, huh? Sometimes it works and sometimes... Okay, here we go. Here's the uncaged edition, guys, that we were looking up. Alright, well, you got Secure ROM. So, obviously, the version you get from that site won't have this. You don't have to worry about the DRM. It's gone. DLC and expansion packs. Never released on PC, so you don't get those. You can skip the intro videos. Configuration, save files. Look at that. It'll tell you everything you need. You want the thing to run and look better than it did years ago? You can do that. Yep, vertical sync, high frame rate, improve the textures. There's even stuff you can download, localizations, VR support. Isn't that pretty cool? You can play it in VR if you want to. A game made in 2009 and you can play it in VR. That's why you use PC Gaming Wiki. So basically, this combined with My Abandonware... And you got plenty of old games. What do you need fucking Xbox for, right? We don't need to worry about that right now. Yeah, I was trying to get my keyboard to do some fun things. But yeah, you don't need to worry about Xbox anymore and their stupid bullshit because you have My Abandonware. If you got a PC, it'll work. Just, you might have to fuck with it. So you go to PC Gaming Wiki, you see what you need to get the game running. And sometimes you gotta check Reddits and all that kind of thing. And you more or less can get it running on Windows and Linux and, you know, other... I don't know about Macs, I guess, you know, there's a lot of ways you can do things. But, yeah, there you go. Plenty of old classic games you can play. And those games, they never get old because, you know, you can always go back and... You have either nostalgia, or maybe you never finished it. You're like, well, you got all the time now to finish it, right? Might as well do it. So what do we got next? Oh, yeah. So about the whole brain implant thing, we'll do one more. 100 days later, Neuralink's first human patient is now using his brain implant to play Slay the Spire. That's what I said, guys. The first human Neuralink implant recipient is playing Slay the Spire, old school RuneScape, and a lot of other popular games. So we talked all about Arbaugh. Alright. Prior to the surgery, Arbaugh had to rely on a mouth stick, an assistive tool that lets the user apply pressure to a touchscreen once placed in the mouth to play games and interact with the digital world. While this did allow Arbaugh to use an iPad, it came with a range of drawbacks. For example, in order to use the mouse stick, he had to be sat upright and have a caregiver present to give him the... Oh, a caregiver present, rather. Not present. to give him the tool. Furthermore, he couldn't speak properly while using it, and prolonged use had the potential of triggering spasms and giving rise to pressure sores. I thought that the mouse stick was a lot better than BCI a month ago, but when we compared them, I saw BCI was just as good, if not better, and it's still improving. The games I can play now are leaps and bounds better than the previous ones, Arbaugh was quoted as saying in a Neuralink blog update marking the 100-day anniversary of his surgery. I'm beating my friends in games that, as a quadriplegic, I should not be beating them in. Neuralink revealed that Arbaugh had recently been using the brain-computer interface for 69 hours a single week, of which 34 hours were for recreational purposes. During this time, he used the assistive tech to surf the internet, learn new languages, and play a range of video games, including rogue-like deck building like Slay the Spire, Old School RuneScape, Mario Kart 8, Deluxe, and Sid Meier's Civilization 6, all by manipulating the cursor with his mind. The scientists are also working on a bespoke gaming functionality within the Neuralink app, which is being designed to give Arbaugh greater freedom as to how and when he can connect and play games. So, let's kind of look at that, because that's really what I wanted to see, and I didn't quite get to show you. So he's using his mind to do all this. I mean, this is pretty long, so we'll just, you know, we'll go through it a little bit. You see how he's doing all this. He's playing the chess, you see. He's playing that with his mind. Civilization. Yep. He's playing Civ 6 right now. Yep. Completely with his mind, just by thinking about moving characters. Characters are being moved. Incredible stuff, guys. And there's Slay the Spire. Gonna play that real quick. Alright, yep. See, you can play Slay the Spire pretty well. It's a deck-building game. Bunch of little different games he's been playing. Dungeon Warfare, yeah, but it's neat. It's kind of cool. And 100 days following his surgery, Arbaugh has set what Neuralink described as a new world record for human BCI cursor control. He is currently able to use the interface to score a value of 8.0 bits per second, which is the measurement used by a scientific community to grade the accuracy and speed of a computer cursor movements. For context, Neuralink engineers clocked in around 10 BPS. This guy can read visual novels with this thing. This guy can play AVN with this thing. He won't, but he can. A score Arbaugh is looking to best in the coming months. The company also revealed that an unspecified number of the electrode-bearing threads that had been inserted to Arbaugh's head during the installation of the N1 implant had retracted from his brain in the weeks after the surgery. The thread, well, we talked about that. IGN's reached out to Neuralink for comment on whether the withdrawal of the threads was an expected complication and if development could in any way impact the patient's health, and will update this article to reflect any subsequent response. Moving forward, Neuralink is looking to increase Arbaugh's ability to control the cursor, partially by combating a known issue known as cursor drift, which is being combated through the development of a bias correction system and by adding new functionality. More specifically, the researchers are hoping to allow users to control physical external aids such as robotic arms and wheelchairs using nothing but the link, which could in turn help quadriplegic patients gain a greater degree of autonomy. That is fantastic. And yeah, it is malfunctioning. I do like this here. I don't know what to think about this. The tech is incredible and also terrifying in so many ways. I wish I could live for another 200 years to see how things will shake out. No, I'm not going to join a community, thank you. With AI enhancing human longevity, you might get that wish. The longest living mammals can live for over 200 years. It doesn't seem like a stretch that we can too. Well, live forever and pop at Elon's supercomputer of the future. Life will cost $100 a minute. Failure to make payment will result in your cyber brain being disconnected. I'd invest in a conservative government bond. Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game, review in progress. Well, I'll be fucking damned. We weren't supposed to cover this. Let's do that. We got one extra article because I did see it. And me and DP were supposed to give you an update on it, like a review. So I guess I can talk about it for a little bit. So the show's going to run a little longer than normal. It already has ran a little longer than normal, but yeah. So Furiosa Mad Max Saga may have defeated Garfield to win the domestic weekend box office, but it also had the worst Memorial Day opening in 30 years with $32.0 million. As reported by ComScore, Furiosa also earned that $32.0 million over the four-day holiday weekend and only brought in $26.3 million in its first 3 days. As of Sunday, May 26, Furiosa had added another $33.3 million, some of that was my money, which makes it global total roughly $65.3 million. It still has a ways to go to recoup its $161 million production budget before marketing. Not counting 2020, it'll make it up in streaming. And not counting 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic began and theaters are mostly closed, we have to go all the way back to 94 to find a film that opened to less money than Furiosa during the Memorial Day holiday weekend, and that movie would be Casper, with $22.0 million. Wasn't that great a film. They made more, though. While Mad Max Fury Road didn't open during the Memorial Day weekend in 2015, it did bring in a bit more at $45.4 million. It ended its theatrical run with $153.6 million in North America and $379.4 million worldwide. The box office performance of Furiosa was not due to a majority of negative reviews, however. It's currently sitting at 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. At IGN, we gave it a rare 10 out of 10. I think I'd give it like an 8.5 or 9. It is really good. In our Furiosa review, we said George Miller's Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. We're not going to fucking do all that. I'll tell you what the movie's like. As a whole, the estimated four-day domestic box office for Memorial Day is $128.3 million. Where's my music? As a whole, the estimated four-day domestic box office for Memorial Day is $128.3 million, which is also the worst of its kind for nearly 3 decades. As for the Garfield movie, it only narrowly lost to Furiosa as it earned $31.1 million over the four-day holiday weekend. I'll look at the Garfield movie later. I do want to see it. I like Chris Pratt. IF placed third during the holiday weekend with $21.0 million. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was $17.2 million, and The Fall Guy was $7.6 million. I like The Fall Guy, but The Fall Guy wasn't necessarily a Memorial Day weekend movie, and The Apes came out before it too. So did If. But alright, so let me talk about Furiosa. Alright, so Furiosa, it's good because yes, it does do her old story. And why that's important is because, first of all, no, she's not a fucking girl boss. One thing that's very important about her character is she knows she's not strong. Like, she has a woman's frame. So she doesn't have the strength of a man, and she doesn't go and, like, knock over 200-pound guys. That does not happen. What she is, though, is she's fast, and she's cunning, and she's witty. So she's able to use a lot of skills and things to her advantage, and that's how she's able to survive in this world. Because as a young girl, she was taught a lot by her mother, who actually gets killed in the movie, and she has to avenge her mother, and she gets basically captured by the person that killed her mother, and then is offered as a bride to Immortan Joe for some goods and things like that to her kidnapper. Or cat, whatever. Yeah, I guess you'd say kidnapper. However, this man was very good to her. And I say that because he says, I protected you from all, you know, all the people that would be after you and all the leers. And he said, what is a leer? A leer is usually people staring at you when they have a malicious or a lascivious intent. So, keep in mind that he says this to her as she is a child. What this means is that he was insinuating that the brutal men that are in the Mad Max universe would probably, well, I mean, they would do something to this child. And that's because they are brutal, lawless, and horrible people. I mean, it is a post-apocalyptic world where very harsh situations and things happen. There are not a lot of women because a lot of them were probably raped and killed. And, of course, there is Immortan Joe's brides, which are hidden You know, keep in mind, those ladies are hidden. They're hidden away from anyone else. And there's very few of them. Because women didn't really survive. And George Miller wanted to show that. The only way for Furiosa to survive was to prove her worth to the men. She had to actually prove her worth. This isn't, I'm a badass. This is like, no, this is what I can do. And then her trainer, you know, as she basically shows how good she is during the awesome rig battle. This is a huge rig battle. But she shows how good she is, and then he decides to train her. And as he trains her, you know, then, of course, they're supposed to go to some special place because she has a constellation on her arm that supposedly shows, like, a land of abundance. And they were going to head there, and, of course, the villain comes in, and that doesn't necessarily happen. And some things just, you know, I'm trying to speed up a really long fucking movie. But basically, there's a lot of shit that happens, and it eventually makes her even more upset to where she has, I guess, even more of a bone to pick with the kidnapper now. Because this kidnapper not only killed her mother, but he did some other horrible things to people she cared about, and now she's got to go in and face this person. I may have dropped some hints. But, yeah. So, anyway, I'll say one thing. She doesn't... Well, I'll say several things, but one thing I really want to state here is that she doesn't say that much. She's almost a silent RPG-style protagonist, where she barely talks. As a kid, she doesn't say a fucking word, barely. She talks in the beginning, but after the thing happens, her mother gets killed, she doesn't say a word until a Morton Joe asks her to speak for herself. And, of course, the villain is comedic, okay? We do know that the villain is Chris Hemsworth, and he does poke a little bit of humor. I mean, it's okay because the world of Mad Max is very dark and dreary. And his humor does come at a decent... I mean, it's fair to have a funny guy every once in a while. That doesn't mean everything in it is ha-ha Marvel. That just means there's a couple funny scenes here and there. Okay? It's not gonna kill... It's still brutal and bleak and people getting shot and killed and dying and death and... But you have a little bit of comedy. Okay? Just a little. It's not going to kill you. I promise. It's funny. You'll laugh. It's dark humor. But anyway, there's some really awesome scenes. I think you're going to like it. It's a movie that you really should watch in the theater because it needs a big screen. If you got an 85-inch, 70-inch TV, like, you're good on that too. But you want to see it on a nice big screen because it's a movie that just... The stuff that happens, the scale of the film itself, guys, it's just immense. The battles... They're crazy. It's an amazing movie. George Miller did it again. It works very well with Fury Road. And it makes you understand Fury Road a lot more. So I definitely recommend you guys watch it. Furiosa is definitely one of my favorite films of the year. And I think you guys will enjoy it. You're not seeing a girl boss. You're not seeing somebody that is powerful and able to take out these men. No, she doesn't. She shoots. She's a good shot. That's fair. Her mother taught her how to shoot. And the man that trained her taught her how to shoot. She knows how to shoot. She didn't just, you know, do it like that. And also, there's a scene when she's pistol whipping a character. And she goes back, like her body is thrown back a little bit by about the fourth hit. And I like that because it shows that she is still a woman and she still has a woman's frame. So when she hits this man, she goes back. Because again, she doesn't have that strength or stamina to be able to stand like a man does. She falls back a little bit. Remember, Anna Taylor-Joy or Anya Taylor-Joy, she's not a big girl at all. She's really kind of skinny, so she has to do her best to to, you know, make it through. Also, the trailer showed her, like, this lesbian cut. Dude, that's the last bit of the movie. That's, like, the last 20 minutes of a 2.5-hour movie. Most times, she's got her long hair, okay? She looks like a long-haired woman. So if you're like, oh, she looks like a feminist. No, dude, she's got the long hair, and of course she's got, like, the little, the paint and stuff. Because, I mean, she is, like, I mean, it's Mad Max. Did you want her to wear all this makeup and shit? It's just, that's the way she... I don't know. You gotta look like a badass, and you gotta act like a badass, even if you're not. And that's what she does. She tries her best, because in this world, if you don't act like a badass and you don't act like a man, this is, as TFM said, this is a hard patriarchy. Morton Joe proves the world of Mad Max is a hard patriarchy. What happens to women in a hard patriarchy? They become fucking war brides and rape slaves. That's exactly what a Morton Joe's brides are. There is a scene where a Morton Joe's bride is having a baby, and she does not have a proper baby, and she says, "No, Morton Joe, I will give you a proper child, I promise." And he said, "You will be good for milking," or something, like they're cattle, right? And of course, Morton Joe's sons were looking at this young bride, the little girl still, as something they wanted to breed. And yeah, that's why she said, "No, fuck this. I'm running up the stairs. I'm cutting my hair off. And I'm doing this, you know, I've got to pretend to be a boy." She even does the Mulan thing for a little bit, where she has to pretend to be a boy. And you got to understand, if she doesn't, what do you think happens to her? She gets raped. That's literally what happens. George Miller's not telling you the whole story, but you can read between the lines. So go watch Furiosa, because it shows you what it's like to be a woman in George Miller's world. That's exactly what the movie is about, and it's really worth watching. And it's not even all about her, because there's a shitload of world building. There's so much world building in that movie. If you really wanted to know what the world of Mad Max looked like, what the Citadel and the Bullet Farm and Gasland and all those places were, it tells you. It shows you all those places. It shows you why these gang warfares are important. Who controls what? You know, the Bullet Farm has all the bullets. Of course, in Morton Joe, he has all the resources and water. Gasland, they have all the gas and oil. So, yeah, they're all, you know, these fortresses. That's literally what they're called, the fortresses of the wasteland. And you learn that by watching the movie. It's really good, and it's a great world-building movie, and it's definitely worth watching with Fury Road. So if you watch that and then go watch Fury Road right after, it makes it like a full series, right? It's like a full thing. You watch it from begin to end. You get their whole story. So it's definitely worth watching, guys. It ends as it should, and it ends right at Fury Road. Like, as soon as the movie, like, the last, okay, guys, the last scene, boom, Fury Road. Like, it's that quick. But all right, guys, at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and we'll see you next time on Grimm's, I've said so many Grimm's stuff. The Grim Articles Show with more great articles. So stay tuned, guys. I am out of here.